Good morning and welcome to Connections. I'm Brian O'Neill, and we've heard and seen a lot about wind energy on TV and on the radio. We've heard a lot about wind energy, especially in Steuben County, where if passed, there's probably going to be something like 1,000 wind turbines on the hills. This morning, we're connecting with an attorney from Cattaraugus County who knows a lot about the behind the scenes of these big wind turbines that we've seen in places like Cohocton. That's because he's worked as a lawyer in some wind cases. Attorney Gary Abraham. Gary, good morning.
Good morning.
Gary, wind projects come to town and people are told that it's a good thing for the environment because wind farms, which generate electricity and send electricity to the wind companies, we're told that wind doesn't create a lot of pollution, and we're told that wind power is going to lower taxes for the areas where they're coming because of all the money that wind projects bring. Some people even think that they're not even going to have to pay their electricity bills anymore because they're going to be living in an area where there's wind farms. And besides which, people feel, you know, that small farmers, many of the wind farmers are small dairy farmers who went out of business, and they feel, well, they, you know, they're not getting a lot of business these days. And it's a great way for old dairy farmers to make some money now that they're not in the dairy business anymore, which is very often the case. But Gary, you maintain that there's another side to wind energy that's not so nice. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the impacts of wind farms on residential rural communities is unacceptable, frankly. In the Midwest, you can site these wind farms within miles of where people live, but they create a lot of noise. They will increase the background noise level 15 to 25 decibels. New York State guidance on noise assessment says that an increase of 6 decibels is enough to cause complaints. And an increase of 20 decibels is classified as intolerable. So the noise impacts, in my mind, are the biggest problem with these. And it may be the case that wind generated energy has a place, although it doesn't really generate very much electricity. That remains to be seen. If they're properly sited, I think nobody would have any objection to them.
And what are the other problems that wind could pose for people?
Well, the most common complaint besides noise is shadow flicker, which is the effect that the wind turbines have as they cast a shadow at sunup and sundown on people's homes. And makes the inside of their home, even when the blinds are drawn, flash in a way that is extremely annoying and is linked to migraine headaches in people that have pre-existing disposition to migraine.
How about property values?
Well, the jury's probably out on property values. We don't have any good studies except some that are done or sponsored by the wind industry. And those studies generally, the ones I've seen anyway, are based on property values 5 miles away from a wind farm. I haven't seen anybody do a study of what happens to property values within a mile of a wind farm, where the noise impacts are noticeable and substantial. And the visual impacts are clearly substantial.
Gary, people who protest wind projects coming to their area are often accused of being what they call NIMBYs. That means not in my backyard. And these so-called NIMBYs are often accused of being jealous, controlling, maybe trying to stop their neighbors from having a chance at making some money. Why is it that these people that are called NIMBYs, the people who live next door to something like a wind project, why would they try to stop a wind project from going up?
Well, clearly they're the people who would be most adversely impacted. And my understanding of what they're saying is not that they don't want it in their backyard. They don't want it in anybody's backyard within a mile or so of these wind farms. And if town boards or whoever's making the decision on whether to approve these projects would do their homework on the noise impacts in particular, they would find that that's not unreasonable.
Gary, a wind company official once said to me that when telephones first came out, that people probably complained about telephone poles, but then people got used to the phone poles. What about that? Is wind energy, is it kind of like the phone company first coming out? Is it a new technology that at this point in history we're just not used to yet?
No, it's not like the phone company. The phone company provides a valuable service. Wind farms, according to one of the manufacturers of the wind turbines themselves, GE Energy, can be expected to generate no more than 10% of their rated capacity on land locations in New York. That's because New York has a very low wind resource compared to out west, where winds are classified 1 to 7 in terms of how much energy they have. Out west, it's very common to have class 6 winds. There are very few areas in New York that have even class 4 winds, and they're very isolated. Most of New York is class 3 or below, so the wind resource in New York is marginal at best for these things, and as I say, that's the basis for the manufacturer's own report to the New York State Energy Agency last year that they shouldn't expect much more than 10% of their rated capacity. That means when you have a 50-turbine wind farm that has 2-megawatt wind turbines, and the developer says this is a 100-megawatt project, it really will not generate more than 10 megawatts. To put that in perspective, a conventional power plant generates 1,000 megawatts. So you'd need 100 wind farms. Each of those would be about 25 square miles each to even begin to displace the equivalent electricity generated by a conventional power plant.
So if it's the case that wind projects are often only going to be generating about 10% of what wind projects are capable of generating, why so many wind projects in New York State?
Well, the basic reason is the public money that's available. Really what makes these wind projects spin is the massive amount of federal and state tax credits and subsidies that are available for these projects. They're making much more through these public monies than they are through the income they generate by selling electricity.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to ask that, too. Where does the money for wind projects, where does it come from? Do wind turbines send the electricity to the electricity grid, and then the wind companies get paid by the electric companies? Is that how it works? Or, as you say, is there some kind of subsidy money and grants coming in from the government?
Sure. In New York, wind projects are guaranteed a wholesale price whenever they hook up to the grid for the electricity that they generate. That means there's really no market for these things. They've got a guaranteed price. But as I said before, the amount of money they get from federal and tax credits and subsidies overshadows the amount of money they get from the energy grid for the electricity that they provide.
Why is Attorney General Andrew Cuomo investigating wind projects in New York State?
Well, the basic method in which they operate is questionable and may violate conflict of interest laws and other laws that are designed to maintain transparency in public decision making. And what precisely is going on is that there's a general pattern all over the state where the wind developer comes into a community well in advance of ever announcing that there's a project that it wants to propose and starts buying up easements from private property owners, occasionally capturing in this group of participants in the future project town board officials or planning board officials or county officials who might have a role in approving these projects. So by the time the proposal becomes public, there's a small army of people who are clamoring for the wind project who never really had an environmental bone in their body but now really have some money at stake. They've already been paid a down payment and they've been made a promise that they will get annual rent payments for every turbine on their land. So at the first public hearing, you have a small group of people who outshouts and outnumbers anybody who's got any concerns, and often there are a few people that show up with real concerns because nobody knew about the project.
And apparently Attorney General Cuomo is investigating partly because of conflicts of interest. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I think there's two sides to the investigation as I understand it. Initially, the Attorney General subpoenaed records from two wind farm companies, Noble Environmental and I believe PPM Energy. Trying to find out all of the dealings that they had with people in the community, including public officials. The second side of the investigation has to do with whether any interest in these projects, or whether their family members or friends or even their employers might have stood to gain from these projects. If, for example, somebody works for a gravel mine, they may their employment and their employer may benefit from selling gravel for the project later. Those are conflicts of interest generally that require the official to disclose the interest and recuse him or herself, not just from voting on approval of the project, but from any discussions in the official body, whether it be a town board or planning board or so forth, having to do with the project. So they can't even participate in any way in the discussion about the project if they have a material interest or they would be benefited in some way by the project.
Yes, I remember one time being at an industrial development agency meeting and an attorney who was on the IDA board said, I'm sorry, I have to excuse myself from this one. I have a conflict of interest.
Right, and generally the law requires officials to recuse themselves in that way, even when there's an appearance of a conflict of interest. So you know, you really have to bend over backwards if you're a public official to maintain the integrity of your position and the integrity of the board that you're serving on to make sure the public doesn't even believe that there's a conflict of interest.
And have you seen any cases where a politician is on a town board and he votes for a wind project to come to the area, and then it turns out that we find out that the politician does have a conflict of interest because he does have a lease with the wind company to put a wind turbine on his land?
Yes, I've seen a number of those.
Can you tell us about those?
Well, I'd rather not go into the details pending this investigation. I think the Attorney General will do the right thing, and if there are charges that need to be brought against people, that will happen.
Okay.
Now, you've dealt with a number of wind situations. Have you seen a lot of fighting? Is that a common thing when a wind project comes to town where the wind farmers get into arguments with their neighbors?
Oh, it almost always happens, and it goes back to your question about NIMBYs. You have this real conflict between the people who have legitimate concerns and want their local officials to look at the research on this, and on the one side, and on the other side, you've got people that are acting in an entirely material interest, you know, out of an entirely material interest. So it's not, you know, it's not fair to brand the concerned citizens as NIMBYs in the sense of being selfish. In fact, they're rather unselfish. They're not getting paid for any of the work that they're doing. They have no ox of their own that's being gored, except they're trying to maintain, you know, their lifestyle. Whereas the people who want these things are interested in money, and that's all they're interested in.
Going back to the topic, Gary, about conflicts of interest for a moment, a lot of people might say, you know, but if the government people have a chance to get a wind contract and make some money, you know, more power to them. Can you tell us why is it wrong for politicians who vote for wind projects to make some money from a wind project?
Well, it's illegal. That's the first thing. It's a conflict of interest. But I think the broader question that you're asking is why is there anything wrong with a town trying to bring development to its community? And I think that there isn't anything wrong with that. But the primary obligation of town board members, planning board members, and so forth, is to watch out for the health, welfare, and safety of their community. And if they can cite these projects in a way that does not adversely impact a lot of people who don't agree to sell away their rights to low noise levels and you know, a pleasing scenic vista and so forth, what they came to the country for or why they stayed in the country to live, if they can do that without affecting these people, then there's nothing wrong with that. But I think in the end of the day, it will be very difficult to find sites for these very large projects that maintain a 1 mile or even more setback from people who don't agree to be adversely affected.
Now, we've heard about wind companies telling people that the project is going to create a lot of good jobs, job for people who run the wind turbines and construction jobs for the people who put the wind turbines up. But others say that wind projects don't create so many jobs. What's the truth on this one, Gary? Can you tell us, do wind projects create jobs?
Well, they create jobs in the short term when they're being constructed. They go up fairly fast. They generally will go up in a year or, you know, something like that, a little more than a year from the time they get all their approvals. And there'll be trucking jobs. There'll be jobs for people who have gravel, concrete. So there are those kinds of jobs, but then those jobs disappear, and what's left behind are the equivalent of a couple of full-time inspector jobs at roughly minimum wage. And that's a problem. That's not really helping anybody. And it's particularly relevant to IDA sponsorship of these projects, which is very common. The enabling statute for IDAs, industrial development agencies in New York, requires them to sponsor projects only when permanent jobs will be created. These projects really, as they say, don't create permanent jobs. So there's a real question as to whether it's even legitimate for the IDA to sponsor these things in the first place.
Okay, now let's say that the wind project doesn't work out. Nobody would want to see these huge wind turbines just sitting there and not working. Aren't the wind companies supposed to pay for taking the wind turbines down so that if the whole project doesn't work out, then the neighbors and the townspeople who would live near them won't get stuck with a bunch of wind turbines that aren't working?
Sure. Well, every town that I know of has a decommissioning procedure for these projects so that when they do reach the end of their lifetime, their effective lifetime, the company that put them up is obligated to take them down. The problem is that these are, as I indicated earlier, these are primarily financial projects. They're designed to shelter taxes for not just the wind developer, but the parent corporation, because most of the tax breaks that these things rely on are transferable. So you'll find that, you know, all these credits are generated, couldn't possibly be used by the actual company that's putting up the wind farm because it's not generating enough income. But those credits are being used by either the parent corporation, or there's ways to flip these projects so that an unrelated company can take advantage of the tax credits. Under those conditions, I would expect that many of these projects will fail as they get into maturity, and particularly in the next 10 years or so when real effective sources of renewable energy start to come online. I think wind power will be looked askance at because it really doesn't generate very much power. And I would expect that a number of these companies will fail and go away, and there won't be anybody to decommission these things, notwithstanding the agreements the town boards have made.
Do you think that most towns are prepared with some kind of bond or something to have the wind turbine dismantled?
No, I think they've made the best agreements they can, but if the company dissolves and there's no company in 20 years, there's nobody they can go to take these things down. They're going to have to take responsibility for them themselves.
Now, if the wind company that puts the turbines up ends up selling to another company and a new wind corporation comes to town, and then that wind company ends up leaving or something goes wrong, is it possible that that wind company could just take off and leave the turbines standing?
No, I think the decommissioning agreements are structured to apply to successor corporations, and it's very common for these things to be sold because their primary value is in the tax credits that come from the state and federal government. And so companies are eager to buy these things not to be green or to do any public benefit, but rather to get the benefit of tax shelters that are extremely lucrative. So as long as that continues, there will be a successor, but I would be afraid that a number of these would fail and, you know, would not be purchased by somebody, and that there wouldn't be anybody left standing, you know, when the music stops.
Can you tell us anything about the tax shelters?
Well, there are a variety of these, and it's not hard to find this information. There are a number of good watchdog websites like windaction.org or even Concerned Citizens of Cattaraugus County has a page of information and links to further information so you can find out the details. I think it would take much too long to explain all of the tax breaks that are available. But, you know, the main point is that they're worth multiple times more than the electricity that's being sold by these projects, and they're transferable. So they become vehicles for tax shelters for parent corporations and other affiliates of these wind companies.
Well, Gary, wind energy is, unless something major happens, going to be a huge part of our area, so your expertise is much appreciated on this subject. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Gary Abraham, an attorney in the Cattaraugus County town of Allegheny. He's an attorney that handles public and private interest law, specializes in environmental and land use regulation and enforcement. And so, of course, in this area, he has a lot to do with wind energy cases. Thanks so much for listening to Connections. I'm Brian O'Neill. Join us again next week.